It is the Good Food Hour with Chef John Ash and me, Steve Garner. First of all, we want to pay tribute to Nach Waxman. Mm-hmm. His name is spelled N-A-C-H, but they pronounced it Nach Waxman. And he owned what many people considered was the greatest culinary bookstore in America, in Manhattan, called Kitchen Arts and Letters. Did you ever meet him?
I did meet him, and he was very encouraging to me when I met him before I did my first book. And he encouraged me to do it and spent a little time with me. He was quite a guy.
Did you go to the bookstore?
Oh, yeah, yeah. And actually, several times.
And was it all that it was cracked up to be?
Yeah, and it was everything to do with the kitchen, not just recipe books, but historical books. He had rare books there of, you know, people and places and times that it was the great place to go.
Well, chefs, authors, restaurateurs from around the world would make a pilgrimage to this bookstore. Yeah. He started it in 1983, and he passed away unexpectedly this past Wednesday at 84 years old.
Well, it's one of those things that when you go to New York City, I mean, if you're listening to this show, then you'd love this store.
He was an editor at Harper & Row for 12 years, which I learned. So he had a background in publishing, was also a trained archaeologist. He was the type of guy that you wouldn't know because he never wrote endorsements on the back of cookbooks.
No, but he knew what made a good book. And he would tell you if you went into the store and talked to him. It's like, this is a good book because fill in the blanks.
But not only high-end, erudite, expensive, one-of-a-kind books, he had a great appreciation for the small books, the church supper books. He would rummage through yard sales to find these little treasures. And we really looked forward to reading his weekly, sometimes bi-weekly newsletter. And you can still go online and sign up for Kitchen Arts and Letters newsletter.
Plus, he's got a very famous recipe that's kind of all over the web for his brisket of beef. So if you like brisket, try Nach Waxman's brisket recipe.
Time magazine described him as part detective, part historian. Celia Sack, owner of Omnivore Books in San Francisco, which is Northern California's ultimate cookbook destination, emailed us and said, "The first time I walked into Kitchen Arts and Letters, I was impressed, not by the books, but by the postcards. I remember picking out one of each, all food and drink related, and thinking, if I ever open my own cookbook store, I will have a great postcard selection too. I finally got to meet Nach a few years later after I'd opened Omnivore, and we went out to dinner. We talked all about cookbooks and the business of rare books, which was my background and a passion for both of us. He let me tour his basement treasury of vintage books, and we wrangled over our philosophies of how to sell them. My shop and all the other cookbook stores would not be here without him. Kitchen Arts and Letters gave us the confidence to open, to see what was possible, and to honor these books with our own stores. Thank you, Celia." Okay. This was kind of interesting. We received an email from the Starks, Mark and Terry Stark, that own seven restaurants here in Sonoma County. And it says, "This week, Mark and Terry Stark from Stark Reality Restaurants Group announced that 85% of their 475 hourly employees and all their managers have been fully vaccinated. The Starks are shooting for 100% by entering all fully vaccinated employees in a lottery for $1,000 gift cards. Each of the Stark's seven restaurants will hold drawings for three $1,000 gift cards on September 1st. Managers are also assisting employees with locating vaccination clinics and even helping out with transportation." So seven restaurants, John, times three, $21,000 worth of gift card merchandise.
Boy, talk about an incentive, huh?
There are a lot of different restaurants and bars, as you've probably seen online, John, that are enacting COVID protocols. 300 bars in San Francisco, as of August 2nd, said they're requiring proof of COVID vaccinations or a negative test to enter their bars. 100 restaurants in San Francisco, 25 in the East Bay, and 6 in the North Bay are requiring proof of vaccinations. Fern Bar in Sebastopol, I think, might have been the first. They were certainly one of the first, along with R3 Hotel in Guerneville And then Timberline Hotel Restaurant, also in Guerneville. And in Napa, Latoque is requiring vaccination.
I think we're going to see every place, nearly every place, requiring it. And I'll tell you, how do you feel? I don't want to go to a place in which there isn't some incentive for vaccination.
Well, I think it's going to be onerous for the owners and staff to try to control this. Good for them.
Well, and when you see people like Google and Facebook and all of that, all of those kinds of places requiring people who come together to be vaccinated, it's going to happen.
I talked with Betsy Fisher, who teaches the front of the house operations and restaurant management certificate programs at the Santa Rosa Junior College Culinary Department. Betsy also manages the SRJC Culinary Career Center. So what she said, the restaurateurs she's spoken with are very conflicted about this, about which direction to go. There's the, you know, what your heart tells you and then what your business tells you. And it's a tough road for restaurateurs.
Well, you know, people that I've talked to have also said that they don't want to go back to work at a place in which there isn't some protocol for dealing with COVID.
So, that's exactly what Betsy, her next statement to me was, there are potential employees who don't want to go back to work because they don't want to be in an environment where their coworker might not be vaccinated. And of course, they're concerned about customers coming in who are not vaccinated. Not everyone is on board with this approach. Last week, Basilico's Pasta e Vino, have you heard of this restaurant?
No.
In Huntington Beach. No. Generated headlines worldwide when it decreed that proof of being unvaccinated is required for entrance.
Oh, God.
The declaration caught the attention of LA Times columnist Steve Lopez, who wrote that his first thought was that the restaurant should be shut down and the owner fined. But then he wondered if the restaurant owner might be on to something, adding, quote, instead of letter grades, as we have in the windows of Los Angeles restaurants for health and safety ratings, let's have big signs in every window. V for vaccinated and U for unvaccinated. Uh-huh. If you want to eat at a V restaurant, you've got to show proof that you got the shots.
Yeah. But let's add wineries to that, too, because winery tasting rooms are also being affected by this, or should be affected by this. So,
do you know if there are wineries that have enacted this policy yet?
I can't give you names, but I'm sure they're as sensitive to this as restaurants are.
Why don't we take a break and come back, because we didn't get through your massive undertaking. Iced and frozen sweets for summer.
Yeah.
This was quite a remarkable article that you wrote. And we got through most of them, but there's some we didn't get to.
Yeah.
After this message. Don't know if our listeners, some of our listeners might have caught the show last week, but you gave us a wonderful primer on granitas, on sorbets, and vanilla ice creams, and even ice creams without a machine. And then we went on to fresh corn ice cream, which I have yet to make, berry ice cream. And then we got down to sorbets and ices. Did we talk about lychee sorbet with fresh fruits last week?
I don't think we did.
So you get canned lychees.
Well, you can use canned lychees. You could use fresh, but the canned ones are, their advantage is the lychees are packed. Number one, they're seeded. And number two, they're packed in a sugar syrup, and that sugar syrup becomes the sugar sweetening for the for the sorbet. So.
I love your comment in the narrative. Also look for its hairy cousin, the rambutan. Do they taste similar?
They're very similar. If you peeled them, you couldn't tell the difference. And this is their season right now. Oh. So if you go to any good Asian market near you, you should be able to find both lychees and rambutan.
Then we have the cranberry sorbet, which would be so good at Thanksgiving.
Wouldn't it be great? Yeah.
Can you find fresh... Not fresh cranberries, frozen.
But frozen cranberries you can still find. Or if you were real smart, last year you put a few bags of cranberries in your freezer so that you could make something like this.
The next section is shaved ice, or they call shave ice in Hawaii. Did you go to Hawaii and get a shave ice?
I've had shave ice in Hawaii. You know,
they're great.
It's like a snow cone.
But you can charge a lot more
than
calling it a snow cone. Yeah. And then semifreddo.
Semifreddo is another frozen dessert. It translates in Italian to half frozen. And it doesn't require a machine. You can just do it all in a bowl and then stick it in. And when you freeze it, it doesn't get firm. It's kind of soft, and it's really delicious. So I did one that they're so simple to do.
And it's a ginger and cranberry semifreddo with blackberry sauce.
Yeah.
What do I need? Special apparatus? I need an electric mixer.
You need nothing. An electric mixer, yeah. Because you beat up whipped cream that you fold into the mixture and then freeze it. And you can add anything to it. I added candied ginger and dried cranberries, but you can leave them out. You can add other things.
This is great. The little orange zest you added to this too. And it's basically you line a tin or a mold with plastic wrap, and then you fill it with the mixture, cover with plastic, and freeze for 6 hours, unmold, cut into slices, and surround with fresh blackberry sauce and mint sprigs.
Yeah.
It's that easy?
It's so easy. Well, and it sounds very sexy.
A beautiful recipe package online now on the KSRO Good Food Hour website. Just go to the recipe section and look for the Iced and Frozen Sweets for Summer by Chef John Ash. Well, this is certainly one of the most unique cookbooks we have seen this year.
Isn't it?
Wouldn't you say?
Yeah, it's something close to my heart. I think when I was in Portugal last, I brought you some really beautiful, because it's an art form in Portugal and Spain, these tinned fish.
And that's the topic of our conversation after this break with Chef Chris McDade, the magic of tinned fish. Elevate your cooking with canned anchovies, sardines, mackerel, crab, and other amazing seafood. He'll be coming up next. It is Steve Garner and Chef John Ash in the KSRO kitchen this morning. When we saw this book, The Magic of Tinned Fish, we both said, we've got to get this book, didn't we?
Yeah, yeah.
And we have to, if we can, have the author, Chef Chris McDade, join us for a chat, because this is not the type of cookbook you usually see released, and that's what made it so interesting to us. Chris is the chef and owner of Popina, an Italian restaurant with Southern touches located in Brooklyn, New York. And Chris, thanks so much for joining John and me this morning. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you guys doing?
We are doing great. I love the fact that your restaurant has Southern touches. I went on and looked at the menu. Where do all these Southern touches influence come from to add that to your Italian menu?
Yeah, so I was born and raised in Georgia. So a lot of it is just, you know, things I was around when I was a child or things that my mom or grandma may have cooked. It kind of makes sense for me. Italian food and Southern food, they're very similar.
Yeah.
Anyway.
You have a wonderful Southern lilt to your voice. It's great.
It's funny if I go home, because my wife and I have been in New York now for almost 15 years, and if I go home, my friends tell me it's gone, you know, but if I'm around.
That's funny.
A bunch of New Yorkers and Yankees, they always tell me that they can hear it a little bit.
You do feature a lot of these tinned fish on your menu.
Yeah, and that was... That was before the book. You know, it's not a way to like prop the book up. It's something that at the restaurant we've believed in since day one, especially anchovies. I'm a huge fan of anchovies. Mm-hmm. They are often misunderstood, and usually they're like a chef's secret umami bomb in a lot of ways.
Mm-hmm. How did this all begin, your use of tinned fish, tinned and glassed fish in your cooking?
Yeah, so like I said, a lot of it started with anchovies, right? And then as I started to dive deeper into Italian food, it was almost things that were kind of shocking. So bagna cauda, for instance, was something that I had for the first time when my wife and I traveled to Piedmont, and then we had vitella tonnato, which you guys know is like a classic preparation, they use tinned tuna. In the book, we actually use tinned mackerel. And that they add flavor. It's like an easy way to add a lot of flavor to your food. And a lot of times, they add texture in a way that fresh fish can't.
Yeah. So I've spent some time in Spain and Portugal, and it is so amazing when you go there. They have these shops that's all they sell are tinned fishes of all kinds with the most colorful labels on them. And you cover them all in your book, but it isn't just tuna or anchovies, but it's octopus and mackerel and
mussels
and oysters and on and on and on. And it's very much part of the cuisine of that part of the world.
Yeah, no, for sure. So we traveled through to Spain. We started in Barcelona, and then we made our way through Penedès and up through San Sebastian to Bilbao. Mm-hmm. And when you're in Basque country at those Pincho bars, tin fish is everywhere. Mm-hmm. And a lot of places will just crack open, like you said, these beautiful tins. And there's like the most perfect fish inside, but a lot of them also get creative with the tins of fish, which is kind of what helped to inspire a lot of the recipes in this book. Mm-hmm. Next August, I'm actually leading a culinary wine trip through Portugal, so I'm super excited for that. I may have to get some recommendations from you guys.
Yeah. Well, you know, Lisbon is sort of ground zero for these stores that sell all of these fishes, canned fishes of all kinds. So, yeah, I'll send you a couple of suggestions. Over time, have you served most of the recipes in the book in your restaurant?
No. So most of these recipes there are recipes in the book, like anchovy butter we use, anchovy pastas that we've done. We've definitely done, like, pasta con lasagna. But a lot of these recipes aren't built for restaurant chefs, right? This is more ways to help people at home, elevate their cooking a little bit and not have to put in so much work, right? So kind of like we mentioned before, these fish are caught, cleaned, processed, and cooked, usually within 24 hours, and it's not like they're not catching these fish out of season. Most of the fish that ends up in these tins, if you get them from, a reputable supplier, they're at their peak freshness. And so when people open these tins, they're just getting the best tasting fish that can be caught, and all the hard work is done for them, right? Someone else caught it, someone else cooked it. You just have to pop a tin, have a few simple things in your pantry or refrigerator, and you can have something delicious on the table in 15 minutes.
So there's one in here that really illustrates that, and it's your smoked oysters, saltines, and hot sauce, which you said you've eaten on every fishing trip you've ever gone on.
Yeah, I mean, that's something that came straight from growing up. We used to go fishing a lot in the North Georgia Mountains, and actually, one of my uncles kind of turned me on to this when I was a kid, but it was like tin smoked oysters, saltines, and a little thing of hot sauce. We would always take it with us. It's easy to get in. It's easy to get out. We use Oconee oysters in the book, which are just amazing and like the best quality. Mm-hmm. The ones I was using when I was 7 or 8 were probably 79 cents for a tin of oysters.
This recipe is the only one that you give a warning for in the book. You say, warning, this smoked oyster spread is highly addictive.
I eat it still to this day, and I still use the same 79 cent oysters too. There's just I can't, it's like, I don't know, it's like a tomato sandwich for me. You don't ever want anything more than just like a beefsteak tomato, Duke's mayonnaise, and white bread, right? It's like you can try to fancy it up as much as you want, but it's just never going to be this good.
In the world of tinned seafood, Chris, I noticed you don't include any recipes for tuna or salmon.
That has a lot to do with sustainability, and like, by no means am I saying there aren't producers that don't catch tuna and salmon in the right way that is good for population and it's good for the environment that these fish live in. But most of that's just not the case, right? And so we know with smaller fish, they regenerate more quickly. They're lower on the food chain. Another reason we left them out was because of the perception Americans have of tinned fish is like chicken of the sea, sun-kissed mm-hmm. tuna, and we wanted to steer clear of that because, as we did a good job in the book, we highlight there's so many. The world of tin fish is so big. It's not just like tuna casserole. There's so much more to it than that.
So there are good producers of tin fishes in the States, aren't there? Or can you name some of your favorites?
Yeah, so some of the, there's not a lot in the States, but like I mentioned, Oconee is a good brand, and they do oysters. There is a company called Fishwife, who is, they're kind of new, kind of like a fresh voice, you know, in the world of tin fish, something that's been around for a long time. And one of the ones that they do is a smoked trout, and they use farm trout. They said it was out of, the trout they get is out of Idaho, and farm trout gets a lot of control. It's really good for the environment. Another one is a company called J.M. Clayton. And their stuff is, it's a little more challenging to find. I think you have to order it directly from them. But it's great crab meat straight out of the Chesapeake Bay.
I like in the introduction you give us all the reasons why tin fish can be much more versatile and delicious than their fresh counterparts, is the quote from the book. And one of those is it's economical. It's two, it's convenient, easily transportable. Three, it's nutritious. Four, it's delicious. Mm-hmm. Five, they're sustainable. And six, until they're open, they don't require refrigeration either.
As long as you're getting them from producers that do things the right way, they're super sustainable, right? There's the fish themselves are sustainable. They don't take a lot of energy to keep them in their peak condition. And even when you're done with them, there's zero waste. And then the tins themselves can be recycled. So on a sustainability front, they check all the boxes. But like we mentioned earlier, as far as being delicious, these fish are caught when they're at their best. Mm-hmm. There's people that are experts in their craft that are cleaning and getting these things in the tins. And a lot of companies, like another one that's in the U.S., Patagonia, they do a lot of different like marinades and seasonings with their fish. And what's cool about their tins is they put their sauces on the bottom of the tin so that when you open them and you just flip them over on a plate, it's like someone sauced your piece of fish for you.
Wow.
It's a really cool way to do it.
Some people might choose glass over tin. What's your feelings about that? Advantages to tin?
There are advantages to both, right? But for tinning, sunlight is obviously not good for fish, right? And so things that sit on a shelf, the store has them close to the window, or even just like the light that comes off of your lamp or whatever, is not going to be good for whatever's in that jar. The artwork on the boxes of the tins themselves are beautiful. Mm-hmm. But like, there's also something amazing about like seeing these perfect anchovy fillets or this perfect like loin of mackerel in a jar. But I think to preserve freshness, tins are the way to go.
We'll take a break. Chef Chris McMade is with us. His last name is spelled M-C-D-A-D-E, McDade, and he's written the book The Magic of Tinned Fish, Elevate Your Cooking with Canned Anchovies. Yes, canned. Give them a chance. Sardines, mackerel, crab, and other amazing seafood. Steve Garner and Chef John Ash in the KSRO kitchen this morning. We are talking with Chef Chris McDade from New York this morning. His new book is The Magic of Tinned Fish, Elevate Your Cooking with Canned Anchovies, Sardines, Mackerel, Crab, and Other Amazing Seafood. I'm Steve Garner along with Chef John Ash. Chris, we wanted to make you feel at home, so we brought in our collection of tinned fish this morning. And as we mentioned, the photography in the book is gorgeous. All these photos of tinned fish, the illustrations are beautiful, and the recipes really look appetizing. Let's jump into the first section, anchovies. John, what caught your eye there?
Well, one of them, which we were talking about off the air, is the Gilda, which I had in Portugal. Every bar I went into, they would serve the Gilda, which is, can you describe what the Gilda is?
Yeah, so the Gilda is like a classic Basque country pinto. So it's like this spicy, briny Gandia pepper, the manzanilla olive, and an anchovy. And it's like, if you've had one, you can't just have one.
No.
Like, they're like perfect. like you need a whole plate of them, a cold beer, and you'll be happy for a long time.
Yeah. I don't get, how did this connection come with the movie starring Rita Hayworth, the character she played in the movie?
Yeah, so it's kind of a funny story. Just there was a guy that owned a pincho bar for a long time, and he just became a huge fan of the movie, and I think he was looking for a way to sell these things, and so he named it after her, and it stuck, and it worked, and those things are still around.
On to the sardine chapter. Anything you want to try in that chapter, John?
I actually make all the time for myself because it's such a fast dish, and that is spaghetti with sardines. But one of the real classics is bagna cauda. Can you describe that? Because it's the most delicious dipping sauce for raw or slightly cooked vegetables and all of that. Can you describe what that is?
Yeah, so bagna cauda, traditionally, it's just garlic, oil, and anchovies. A lot of time at the restaurant, we will add butter to ours. Mm-hmm. Kind of like it makes it a little bit more rich, and it makes it just a little bit more, the fat just makes it a little bit more approachable to someone that doesn't want like just this sharp punch of garlic and anchovy. But we use it, yeah, like you said, for when spring comes around, we like to use it as just like a hot dipping sauce. We use it for salad dressing. We'll brush steaks on them as we're grilling them or whatever. So you can use it in so many different ways as opposed to just different vegetables in it.
During our break, John said, whoa, beer-battered sardines with a risa. Doesn't that sound great?
Yeah. I never thought to do that, but it sounds fantastic. Anything beer-battered.
Yeah, that was a pleasant surprise. I wasn't sure if it was going to work because the sardines come out and they're so moist that sort of get the batter to stick. But that's why the recipe, it's like, just make sure you dry out really well, and it's something that I've cooked several times since it's been published.
The next chapter is on mackerel. And I was saying to Steve that mackerel's has always been kind of a hard sell because it's a very assertive flavored fish and has lots of oil in it and all of that stuff. But the ways that you've used it in the book, it's like the one I have to try is the mackerel and poached egg on toast. That sounds fantastic.
So tinned mackerel, the way they cook it, it kind of removes a lot of that stuff that scares people off. And it's almost an exact replica of what you would think of tinned tuna. So in the book, if there was anything that we thought tuna would be good in, I just subbed it with mackerel. And it's the mackerel, it is like tuna, but it's also, the flavors are a little bit more nuanced. So it's you get a little bit more from it than you would from tuna.
That's a great use of it. I like the recipe for the green bean, the mackerel, the green bean, tomato salad with chorizo vinaigrette. And this is using the Spanish chorizo, not the Mexican style chorizo. Is that correct?
Yeah, exactly. It's funny you mentioned that. So the book was set to be published June 8th. And then, as I'm sure you guys are aware of, and almost every industry is, shipping containers got held up. And we had a dinner scheduled with some of our friends in a wholesale and retail supplier of Spanish goods called España. It's in Soho in Manhattan. And so the book just happened to be released the exact day this dinner was published. And the mackerel with green bean and tomato salad, chorizo, was one of the things we did, and it was hands down everyone's favorite.
Well, I'm glad I picked that one. On the shellfish, squid, and octopus chapter, John, we talked about the smoked oyster spread.
Yeah.
And I love saying bombalati with crab, bacon, and cream corn. And you mentioned nothing's better than making your own cream corn. It's easy, and gosh, we're awash in corn this summer.
Well, and you introduced us to a couple of different pasta shapes in there that I had never heard about. One is that you have with the squid in its own ink.
Calamarata.
And that's another pasta shape.
Yeah, it basically just translates to, it's made for squid, right? So it's like if you were to cut your squid into, you know, get ready to fry them up for calamari or whatever, that's the shape and size you would do it. So it's kind of like mimic the squid itself.
The next chapter is the trout and cod. And I kind of look at smoked trout, Chris, as kind of the gateway tinned fish. I don't know anyone that does not like smoked trout.
No, I'm a huge fan of smoked trout. And I often prefer it, like this might be sacrilegious to say in New York, but when, like, for my bagel and lox, if I can sub smoked spout, I will.
That's great.
Every recipe in here to me is a keeper. The smoked trout with the grapefruit and avocado with radicchio and Marcona almonds. That I've got to make that.
And the brandade, which you make the point. It's so much easier because you don't have to soak the cod ahead of time.
Especially at home, it takes a lot of work. Hopefully what this book does is it gives people, I guess, the opportunity to try things that may not otherwise would have. This recipe is a perfect example of that.
Yeah, also the smoked trout, the chowder, of course, smoked trout. And this one. Smoked trout and scrambled eggs on everything bagel. I bought three everything bagels from our Santa Rosa Junior College bakery yesterday on Friday, and then I was reading the book yesterday morning, and I thought, great idea. Thank you for introducing us to tin fish. We're really behind the ball on our embracing tin fish, and like you mentioned, maybe it was thought of as just kind of a secondary product. Tuna or poor people's fish, but that's not the case
at all. Some of it, like some canned tuna, is not very good.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, so it's like you're not, you're talking about things that are really tasty and good.
Thanks, Chris, for talking to John and me this morning. This was really fun.
Mm-hmm. All right, gentlemen, thank you so much.
Yeah, congratulations on the book. It's been needed for a long time.
All right, and I'll be in Sonoma soon, and I might come get those Portugal recommendations.
Okay.
Oh, well, you've got our contact number. Call us and come by the show.
All right, man.
Okay, take care, Chris.
All right, guys.
Bye-bye. And our Bay Area listeners will have a chance to meet Chris at Omnivore Books, located at 3885 Cesar Chavez in San Francisco, this Sunday, August 15th, between 3 and 4, and it's free. What have you cooked this week that's excited you?
Well, you know, we're in the middle of corn season, and I'm doing a piece for the Press Democrat on corn, my favorite corn recipes. And the one that I just got very turned on by is little corn blini, you know, little corn pancakes that you can do creme fraiche and green onions and smoked salmon and caviar and blah, 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 whatever you have on hand. But they were so delicious because they have that corn's natural sweetness.
Sounds beautiful. More Good Food Hour next Saturday.